Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Are Pennsylvania's minimum wage earners likely to see a pay increase? What of Governor Tom Wolf's current budget will make it through the Pennsylvania House, and what won't? This week, WPSU's Greg Peterson talks with Democratic Representative Mike Hanna about the governor's proposed budget plan. Hanna represents the 76th Legislative District, which consists of Clinton County and parts of Center County. He's also the House Democratic Whip.
Representative Hanna, thank you for joining us and Take Note.
And thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Governor Wolf has released his budget for the upcoming year. And what aspects, from your point of view, can you really embrace? What you think is really a no-brainer from your point of view?
Well, I was really encouraged by his decision that he's going to pursue a budget that largely looks first at cost savings, streamlining state government. His first two budgets, while he did do significant cuts, I think it was probably about $150 million a year in savings that he had, both budgets proposed significant tax increases that he's not proposed this time. In fact, this budget has no increase in the personal income tax and no increase in the sales and use tax. That's really significant, and I think that's not just embraced by the Republicans in the legislature, but also by a lot of us Democrats in the legislature. I mean, we're supposed to learn from elections, and if we learned anything in November, folks are definitely at a point where they do not want to see us increase revenues through tax increases on middle-class Pennsylvanians. So his budget that comes out and says that we're going to start by finding $2.1 million in savings through streamlining state government, through consolidating agencies, and just other cost savings, I think it's a real positive step forward, and I think I can certainly support that part of the budget.
What do you think of his idea about leasing back the state farm complex?
That needs a lot more development, I would say. I have to tell you that I'm not a financial expert, and with the lease and the lease back, that was confusing to me. And the first thing I did after I heard the proposal is ask the attorneys that work for our caucus to give me a clearer understanding of that, because, you know, obviously that's a very successful facility in terms of the services it provides. I mean, they just wrapped up the outdoor show, which is one of the greatest outdoor shows in North America, probably in all the world. The farm show they wrapped up in early January, and it's also one of the most successful agricultural expos in all the world. So, you know, we don't want to do anything that jeopardizes the operation of that facility, because it brings a lot of entertainment, and it's not just entertainment, it's education and opportunity for Pennsylvania's residents. So, you know, I need a lot more information about that. We're going to have to look at that closely, and we've asked our caucus to explore that deeply so we can be clear on exactly what it means and how it might impact the use of the facility.
Okay. What parts of the budget do you think might need reworking? Are there things in the budget right now that you think just don't make much sense?
Well, things that need more evaluation. I would not be inclined to say they don't make sense. They just need
What would they be?
Yeah, they're new things that we really need to explore. We just talked about one with the lease back of the farm show. A second one is the $25 fee per resident in municipalities that do not have their own police protection. What the governor's asking is for municipalities to pay for the state police protection that they receive. That's an interesting proposal. I mean, one of the motivating factor behind it is the fact that the state police costs have grown significantly. As recently as probably 10 years ago, it was about $500 million. I think in last year's budget, it was $835 million. It continues to grow, and that's not because state police services have grown, because they haven't.
and correct me if I'm wrong, but we've been balancing that need for the budget by taking money out of the roads funds.
And the motor license fund, you're exactly right. So last year we took a significant step to stop that. We said that we want to scale it back to the $500,000 that was being taken out years ago. We believe that that's about the right level, right balance of state police costs coming out of the motor license fund. It's up to $835 million. We want to scale that back over the next 10 years to $500 million. So obviously the cost of state police either has to go down or it has to be absorbed by the general fund budget, since we put that into law last year that they have that the budget, the amount coming out of the motor license fund has to decline over the next several years. So it's not likely that their costs will come down. So what I think the governor's decided is, well, if he has to find other ways to pay for the state police, one of the logical potentials is to look at municipalities who don't have local police protection and instead rely on the state police and say, you know, you need to pay for that, because there are many municipalities that do have local police protection. I mean, right here in State College, obviously, State College Borough has police protection. University Park has police protection, local police protection. Bellefonte, I believe, has local police protection. Mm-hmm. And in Clinton County, part of the part of the district I represent, Lock Haven has police protection. Pine Creek Township has police protection, and Renova has police protection. And those municipal police bodies, local police bodies, often provide a regional service. In Pine Creek Township, in particular, they have a contract to provide police protection. I believe in Avisboro, Wayne Township, both Pine Creek Townships, and. I think there's another one, but it's escaping me right
and
now.
Is that a service being paid for by the municipality when they contract with another municipality?
That's correct, yes. And so what those municipalities have decided is that they need much more visible police protection, and that rather than wait for the state police to respond to complaints, they've decided to go ahead and pay to have local police protection. That's a local decision that I fully support. But I also recognize that there's plenty of opportunity for a lot more of that to happen. Western Clinton County is a perfect example. Renova has a police force. They should be providing services to South Renova, which is a separate borough, Chapman Township, Leidy Township, Noyce Township, and everybody should share in the regional cost of that. Lock Haven's police force is a significant police force. It could be very easily be providing police protection. Woodward Township actually has their own police force, but they could combine, and then they would be providing protection to Woodward, Lock Haven, Castaneda Township, Bald Eagle Township, maybe even Beach Creek Township. It's an opportunity, Allison Township. There's an opportunity there to regionalize these police forces. And then they wouldn't have to pay the $25 fee, which is a good thing. So they have to make that decision.
Right.
And then what other municipalities are going to be faced with is whether or not they want to look at creating a police force or trying to contract for police forces rather than pay the $25 fee. I'm not sure this is going to pass. It's going to take a lot of evaluation, because whenever you're suggesting that locals pay an additional tax, and the municipality would be the one paying, and it would be a per head tax of $25, it always creates some level of controversy. So this is going to have to be explored extensively. That's a part of the budget that really needs to be fleshed out a lot more.
Well, it's a significant problem, especially given the rural nature of central Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of towns that have no police force whatsoever. They depend on the state police, and sometimes response time is less than be desired.
That's right. I mean, Western Clinton County is a prime example. The local state police barracks is probably I'm going to say at least 35, if not 38 miles away. So, the state police do patrol Western Clinton County, and they do patrol in areas like Chapman Township. But it's not every day, and it's not even multiple times a day ever. So it's very seldom that there's a lot of patrol up there in that area. So, something happens and it takes close to 35, 40 minutes to get a response, that's a real concern. So there should be more local coordination to try and create these police forces that will work in a regional way.
Earlier in the conversation, we talked about the governor's plan to do some more consolidation, mm-hmm. Cost savings. One of the things he's looking at is combining four different health services into one big mm-hmm. health,
right.
One really big health. He's not talking about, unfortunately, reducing how does he reduce costs without reducing personnel? That was one of the things he's looking at.
Yeah, there can be some reduction in personnel. The first, one of the good parts about his proposal is he says when he combines these four agencies, that the first thing that they will look at is maintenance or improvement of service. So he's not, the combination has to result in maintenance or improvement of service. There's not going to be a reduction of services when this happens. So, you know, that does create a situation where they have to be sure there is enough people to deliver the services. But when they find overlap, and there is significant overlap in those four agencies, something I wasn't fully aware of, we've been learning this since he announced this proposal, significant overlap. You know, you're talking about combining health and human services, drug and alcohol, and I forget the fourth one, but the four of them together all provide similar services to some of our constituents. So when you have that overlap, there will be the potential for a reduction of employees, largely through attrition, but there will be a potential for that. And oftentimes, they can be reassigned into other agencies, or if if folks are ready to retire, that's the attrition that will allow for the reduction in the workforce. But it will what they're telling us at this point, and of course we'll hold hearings on this, is that it will actually enhance services and at the same time save money.
Any other consolidations that you see in the budget that might be happening?
Yeah, they're talking about criminal justice consolidation. There's like three different departments that they're talking about, probation, parole, that they're talking about combining and trying to make sure that once again there's no overlap in services. And that'll be significant. That'll help as well. It was proposed last year or 2 years, and sometimes it takes us 2 or 3 years to actually warm up to an idea that the governor proposes. And I think we're getting warmed up to that idea. He's also closed the Pittsburgh
right.
State Correctional Institute at Pittsburgh. That was significant as well because it's projected to save between $80 and $90 million. And it was the one state correctional institute that is marketable. In the sense that once it's closed, the state isn't going to be stuck with an albatross that nobody can put to use. This is a piece of property that's along the river right outside of Pittsburgh, the city of Pittsburgh. It's in an area that is crying for additional development. So the fact that we can close that because of the reduction in the number of state inmates, they can close it without any impact on the prison population, plus they can market it and be able to sell it. As you know, SCI Crescent was closed a couple years ago. The state still owns it. It's vacant, and that's a problem. At least this one, when he closed this one, we'll be able to market it.
Okay. Is the population trend for our prisons going down, or is it staying stable?
It's going down. It's actually the mandatory sentencing push that came largely, I want to say, in the late 90s. It was during the Ridge administration. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, so it'd be late 90s, early 2000s, that the mandatory sentencing forced our prison population up. There was a real push for a lot of mandatory sentence. Now that's been revisited, and we've found that it makes a lot more sense to have sentencing parameters that judges can then make the sentence fit the crime. And we're at a point now where, because of that, prison populations are going down. State prison populations are going down, and we are able to close one of the institutes because of that.
Let's talk about pensions. The gap between what's funded and what's not funded continues to grow somewhat. Mm-hmm. And for local school districts, they have no choice but to sometimes just pass that on to the school district residents. Mm-hmm. What do you think about pension reform? Is it something that we have to really address now for future benefit?
Well, first off, Act 120 of 2010 is really working, and it's actually started to slow the growth in that gap, and it's projected that within the next year or two that the growth will stop and it'll start paying off that gap. So that's a good thing, where Act 120 is working. That doesn't mean that it's the only answer. There is room for more. One of the interesting things is that the Senate Republicans in particular were very critical of the governor for not addressing pension in this year's budget proposal. And it was pointed out to the Senate Republicans that last year the governor said to him, last session, Governor Wolf said, put a pension bill on my desk and I'll sign it. And they never did. And as you know, they had large majorities in the Senate as well as in the House, and they never could get a bill passed. Now, we did finally pass a bill in the House and send it to the Senate, but they didn't like it. So I'm not sure what the answer is at this point, but clearly those folks who believe that they want to take additional steps, they have huge majorities in both the House and the Senate to put a bill forward. And the governor said he's open to look at that. So that's certainly an opportunity that can be addressed as part of this budget process. Does it have to be? I'm not sure it does, because most of the proposals that are out there have no immediate impact on this year's budget.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. Our guest today is Democratic Representative Mike Hanna, who represents the 76th Legislative District and who also serves as his party's whip in the House. Looking at a map, every state around Pennsylvania has a higher minimum wage than the federal minimum wage, which is still Pennsylvania's $7.25. The governor, I think, proposed a $12 an hour wage. Is that too much? Is that trying to make too big a bite all at once? I see some states also do a middle type of thing around $8.50, maybe $9, and then tie that to the consumer price index every other year to have annual regular ongoing increases, so we're not stuck with something that was passed 20-some years ago?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no question that Pennsylvania needs to increase its minimum wage. The governor's proposal, that's fine. Let's debate that and see where we land. But actually, Representative Patty Kim out of Harrisburg has a proposal that makes more sense to me. It calls for a $9 minimum wage for companies with 25 or fewer employees, $9 per hour. That would be the increase that would happen for those small businesses, and that's much more realistic, I think, particularly here in rural Pennsylvania. And then it calls for $12 an hour for those employers with 25 or more employees. And then the group that has 25 employees or more would increase 50 cents each year through 2023, so that in the end, by 2023, it gets to $15 an hour. So I think Patty Kim's got the right approach. Whether the exact numbers are correct there, that's part of the debate that we'd have to look at. But I certainly think that we have to see some type of increase, because as you pointed out, every surrounding state has increased its minimum wage, and Pennsylvania is not that different from the surrounding states. We should have an increase, but we certainly can't jump to the governor's $12 an hour just overnight. I think Patty's approach of having smaller businesses have a smaller increase and larger businesses have a larger increase makes a lot more sense.
It seems that some of the larger employers in the state, like Walmart, even McDonald's, they've just proactively raised their minimum wage, just not only because they think they should, but it's hard to get employees.
That's right. Yeah, and we experience that in a lot of parts of Pennsylvania, that it's the workforce is such that, I mean, unemployment, there's been a lot of criticism of the Obama economy, but by the end of his presidency, the national unemployment was 4.8, a little higher, I believe, in Pennsylvania, and a little higher here even in rural Pennsylvania. But it's not dramatic. So, yes, it's tough to recruit employees at this time, and higher wages is one way that you can.
And not coincidentally, that would also raise more funds for the state.
Absolutely. It does have a direct impact on the personal income tax, and it raises more money for the state. You know, and if I could just add on the same line, I have partnered with Mike Driscoll, another legislator in the House, and we've put together a retirement security bill. And what this bill is it allows the Treasury, Pennsylvania Treasury, to create a program of Roth IRAs for employers who do not offer, this private employers, mm-hmm. not public sector employers, but private employers who do not offer retirement incentives for their employees. There's no employer cost, so it's not an unfunded mandate that we're handing down to small business. It just says that they can, as part of their what they already deduct from employees' wages, if the employee elects to participate right. in a Roth IRA managed by the Pennsylvania Treasury, they can do that. So it's got cost savings for the employee. It's an Roth IRA managed by a proven investment management group, because the Pennsylvania Treasury has done a remarkable job in managing educational IRAs. They call them 529s. But the 529 educational IRAs have worked very, very well all across Pennsylvania, and they were always managed by the Pennsylvania Treasury. So now we're partnering with the new Pennsylvania elected treasurer to put this new program together to allow Roth IRAs for small employers who can't afford to offer their own pension system, but now could offer this to their employees, and it's an employee's choice whether they want to participate and at what level. But that would be, it's been proven study after study, if you give people an option like that, they will take it. And right now we need that because studies show the average Pennsylvanian may only have $14,000 saved for retirement when they're ready to retire. That's really sad because, as you know, especially with the pressures on Social Security, having $14,000 in the bank when you're ready to retire and you're likely to have an additional life expectancy of at least 20 to 25 more years, that's $14,000 doesn't go very far.
And just to let our listeners know, a Roth IRA is a special type of IRA where, for the most part, it goes in with after-tax dollars. So when you take it out down the road, there's no taxes on it.
Right. So it works out very well, and it's a program that's proven successful. And this is a chance to have it managed by the PA Treasury, just like they do the educational IRAs, which have worked so well.
It seems like you can't have a conversation anymore without talking about opioids.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the solution is in Pennsylvania?
Well, I've always said step one is we've got to have strong law enforcement to make sure that those who are preying on those individuals that are using drugs, those dealers, those people who are making a living doing this, you have to have strong law enforcement. And when you have strong law enforcement, that's step one. But then step two is you've got to make sure that those who are abusing the drugs, those who are first-time abusers, those who are susceptible to rehabilitation, that's the treatment that you want to do, and that's what the governor has put forward. I think there was an additional $10 million in last year's budget to help with treatment of those who are first-time offenders, people who are available, are likely to succeed in rehabilitation, and that's a program that I strongly support. But as I say, the first step is always strong law enforcement so that we get those who are causing the problem behind bars where they belong.
In the past several years, it seems the Commonwealth has always figured out a way to balance the budget with one-time fixes, with maybe leasing the State Farm Complex or whatever. That seems to be a recurring pattern, which is troublesome because it just relies on revenue that's not going to be there the next year. Mm-hmm. What do you think the long-term solution is?
Well, my voting record speaks for itself. I said last year and the year before that I was prepared to vote for revenue increases that would make it a sustainable budget, that would fix the what they call the structural deficit. Instead, the Republican-led legislature decided that there weren't going to be additional revenues raised, and instead that we were going to do these cuts and, as you point out, go to these one-time fixes. Governor is, at this point, he's bought into that. I mean, he's talking about $2.1 billion in streamlining and cost savings. But he's also got about $1 billion of revenue enhancements, the biggest one of which would be the closing of the Delaware loophole. I've always supported that. I voted for that, and I would agree with that. That's what that eliminates is a corporate tax loophole that's largely used by large corporations, not by mom-and-pop businesses. I mean, most mom-and-pop businesses, when they incorporate, they do a subchapter S corporation right here in good old Pennsylvania. They don't organize themselves with subsidiaries that are actually incorporated in Delaware so that they can transfer their profits to the state of Delaware and not pay taxes in Pennsylvania. Large corporations do that. Mom and pops don't ordinarily do that.
It's almost like an offshore account for Pennsylvania businesses.
That's correct. The governor's proposed that we close that. I've supported it in the past. I'm prepared to support it again. And that is revenue enhancement. That's actually closing tax loopholes on corporations and making them pay their fair share. And it's actually something that you would think the Chamber of Commerce would support, because obviously there's a huge difference between a subchapter S corporation right here in Pennsylvania and they're paying the income tax rate. They pay the personal income tax rate because they are subchapter S. And then there's a corporation that's supposed to pay a higher corporate tax that instead of paying a higher corporate tax, they're actually having a subsidiary in Delaware and avoiding Pennsylvania taxes altogether. So, the, you know, the mom and pop, although they get the break of having not the, the corporate tax but the personal income tax, they're still paying a higher tax because the large corporations are avoiding it altogether. So it, you would think the chamber would say, you know, we want to protect our homegrown businesses, our small businesses, and we want to make sure we close this corporate tax loophole so corporations at least pay their fair share. And unfortunately, we can't get them to agree to that, and we haven't been able to do it. But we'll continue to look at that because the governor's proposed it again, together with he's also proposed a Marcellus shale tax. Once again, that's a tax that I voted for many times. We haven't been able to put it into effect other than the impact fee, but his proposal would not change the impact fee. So local municipalities that get impact fee dollars and are able to fix roads and bridges that are impacted by the Marcellus industry would not be affected. They would still get those dollars. They would be able to continue that. But there would also be a tax just like there is in every other state that has significant gas development. And that would help the general fund. And actually, that's a tax that I've supported and prepared to support again.
Is there any piece of legislation that you personally want to see passed this session?
Well, I think that, you know, first and foremost, we always got to make sure we get budgets done because that's an important part of our job. I mean, obviously, schools in particular rely heavily on that. I'd also like to see us move property tax reform forward. We've done that in the House in May of 2015. We sent a property tax reform proposal to the Senate. They said they didn't like it. It raised $4.1 billion that would have reduced school property taxes on average by close to a third. So we sent it to the Senate. They said they didn't like it. They didn't give us anything back. Well, I think it's their turn now that they've got to tell us what they can support so that we can try and work towards a property tax reduction. That's something I believe strongly in. The second thing I believe strongly in that I'd like to see passed, and it doesn't impact all of my constituents, but a good number of them, is deer management legislation. We've had real problem with the Game Commission and they've been for 16 years now implementing Gary Ault's 5-year pilot program. 16 years later, we're still on a 5-year pilot program. And what has happened largely is a wholesale reduction of deer on public ground, and we want to see that changed, and I'm working very hard to get my legislation on deer management passed so we can try and make sure that public lands in particular are managed for the hunters that pay the fees that largely acquired those public grounds.
We only have about a minute left. You just started your 14th term, which is this will be year 27, I guess.
That's correct.
And what changes have you seen in that quarter century?
Oh, it's been significant. You know, while government has grown, I think it's been pretty managed growth. It's we've alternated, and we seem to do that in Pennsylvania. We've alternated between Democrat governors and Republican governors, and that does impact the growth of government. We've also alternated between Democrats being in control in the House where I serve. When I was the agriculture chairman, I was the chairman and majority chairman, and there was significant difference when you're in the majority. So I've served in both. It's gone back and forth at least three times. I'm hoping for a fourth. I've seen a lot of change in it, but it's all been good, and I'm very proud to serve the area, and I think I look forward to doing it in the future.
Representative Mike Hanna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That was WPSU's Greg Peterson talking with Pennsylvania State Representative Mike Hanna about Governor Wolf's proposed budget. Hanna serves as the House Democratic Whip. Last week, we talked with Republican State Senator Jake Corman. You'll find both interviews on our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.